The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we're talking about kit houses. You've been doing a deep dive on kit houses recently.
Deep dive.
You're liking them.
Deep dive.
Just for fun.
I don't know why we're not building houses this way anymore. That's how amazing this is to me.
What type of inventory would it take to make Hull a kit house producer?
Well, I mean, if
you just can't do it like they did. I don't know why we're not doing it.
So there's a number of things that are we done? There's a number of things that are interesting about it. It starts in the early 1900s. It basically has like a 50-year life from the early 1900s to about 1950. Now, why does it stop being a thing in 1950?
Industrial Revolution.
Why? Think about houses today. And
oh, because it's assembly line houses now.
And what? Consider that this was a cheaper house. What's the cheap house version that they do today?
Mobile homes.
Mobile homes, right? The mobile home industry, when it grows up and gets really big, ends up knocking out this kind of this lower.
Oh, that's sad.
Lower industry, yeah, lower end piece that they did. Now, there's a wonder time. The other thing that happens to this kit building industry is that the Great Depression just knocks it on its rear end. Sears gets out at that time. Montgomery Ward's gets out of it. Aladdin is one of the oldest ones. It lasts until I think the 80s or the 90s. But they were a kit house thing. One of the things that's fascinating to me is that these kit houses, a lot of them, I think starting in the early 1900s, started having ready cut. They called it the ready cut system. But basically the studs and all the different pieces were cut to size, okay? And then the pieces would be stamped. And one of the ways they say that you can tell a kit built house versus another house is because the ends of the boards will have a number stamped on them. And the way they did it was that they had a lot of rooms the same sizes, so that you could, the roof joists could also, the ceiling joists could also be the wall studs and things like that, because they made the rooms in certain sizes so the bunch of different sizes could work together.
What?
But there was some, I think it was Aladdin or somebody, that actually had, instead of just having the plate and a stamp there, they actually had a slot where you'd actually stick the rafter end.
Pre-cut.
So, like a notch?
Like a notch, so that you knew exactly where the joist was supposed to go, or
what?
The stud was supposed to go. So it was crazy, because they would send these parts and pieces onto two railroad cars. Okay. So you think about two railroad cars, and they would alternate the delivery of it, so that by the time you finished your framing and things like that, the next load would show up, so you could do your interiors and start doing your sheathing, so things wouldn't sit in the rain for too long.
Yeah.
But they also, you know, these houses were, you know, there became guys who in cities would build houses and got their reputation as being kit house builders. So there was carpenters who were actually, yeah, I put up a number of those, and they would say to the, hey, if you're building in Des Moines, talk to Joe. He's built six or seven of these houses.
Whoa.
But what I don't understand is you know, they weren't leading. Okay, but look at these pictures. Okay, look how charming these things are.
They're beautiful.
Sears, of course, wanted to sell you also the dining room table and the hall clock and the piano and everything else. So it made total sense for Sears and Montgomery Ward's, because you got the catalog. Basically, Sears starts as a catalog company in the 1880s, selling watches. Selling secondhand watches. That's how they started. And Sears hired Roebuck, because Roebuck was a watch repairman. remember at this time the railroad system is going all over the country and they're trying to promote the railroad system, and they basically make it free to send catalogs. And so these catalogs are, instead of being mailed, or there's a free, it's free to send their catalog. So their catalog starts growing. They start adding all these parts and pieces to it. So by the early 1900s, they're offering everything, bicycles and household products, and they start selling building materials. And so they get into the house business, and they start offering these houses in these different styles. From what I've been able to see, they don't really offer, while you could alter the design of it and say, they would say, we have architects on staff, we can change the design, or if you like a design, you can send it to us. Basically, they were copying plans and popular plans that were already in production. They were just copying those things. So it speaks to the, because you look at these houses and they're charming and interesting. They're not architecturally pure, but they're good houses. They're charming houses. And so, mm-hmm.
Most of them cottages, would you call them?
Yeah. Most of them were smaller because most of the market for these things were farmers.
What was the square footage? Like, what does smaller mean?
1,500 square feet.
That's like 12, on the bigger side 1,200, or smaller side?
Smaller size, 1,200 square feet. The other thing that's funny about this is they would calculate houses at this time by the cubic feet. So you might see these houses being, you know, that's a 20,000 cubic foot house. Or a, you know,
that's a weird
thing. Yeah, right. So they had a different way of calculating the size. And one of the articles I was reading basically said that you could build a house for 20 cents a foot. I was like, 20 cents a foot, 20 cents a cubic foot. And so they were saying that, you know, that houses at this time cost between $1,200 and $3,500. $3,500 in 1920 dollars today was $50,000. So you could build a cheap house for $50,000 then.
That's so good.
I haven't done the calculations yet, but I'm not sure why it was that cheap. And I'm not sure why the inflation dollars have caused houses to go up so much compared to then.
There's a lot of reasons why our dollar is devalued.
Realize that that didn't include the lot. Okay, so that's just the house.
But the lot couldn't have been much more, right? Because the lot's always the cheaper thing.
Well, and it also wouldn't have included labor to do that. So maybe it's doubled that. So maybe maybe it's $6,000. So it's $100,000 to build a house. Maybe something like that.
And today to build a house
is, I think starter houses are
$500,000.
No, starter houses can be from the 220s. I think they're more than that. I think there's some houses from the starter houses from the 160s, depending on where you are. But I mean, I don't think you're getting a good house for under $300,000.
Jeez Louise.
And so you think about things like one of the things I want to do is just compare it to way a house is built today. What's different? Well, we've talked about this before on the show. The sheathing of a new house is basically cardboard. Sheathing in one of these houses would be a 1x12, 3/4 inch thick, you know.
Stacked up.
Yeah, stacked up. And so the sheathing on this house would have been boards that were nailed to it. Shiplap boards. What?
It's like a tank compared to you know?
Totally it is.
Wait, so?
The trim, there's
a trim. Clamshell.
The sheathing is 1x12 stacked 3 deep?
No, on top of each other.
Yeah.
Oh, like horizontally, okay, like shiplap. Great, I was like, wait.
Have you seen the sheathing that we're talking about? It's like a 16th inch thick piece of paper.
Maybe an 1/8 inch, right?
1/8 inch piece of paper?
Like a piece of cardboard just punch through it.
What?
You could totally punch through
it.
Instead of like plywood?
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of like OSB even.
What? Yes. No, I haven't seen that actually.
So it's
that's crazy.
You talked about it. I've been thinking about it since I've seen it. There has to be some shear strength
that cardboard,
it just doesn't the building isn't able to rack when that stuff is nailed to it.
Maybe it's the sheetrock that holds it.
Well, I mean, the reason you're supposed to
you're
have
probably
the,
right
sheathing on a house is like this to keep from
racking.
I think it's got to be illegal. And that's got to be, but they do
Well, it's also an exterior layer. It's like one of the
No, build-ups. It's the exterior layer.
Well, then you got
Wait,
brick on top of
what?
That.
Oh, yeah. But you're putting stuff out there.
Oh, like, you're putting like a siding or yeah.
something. But if that siding's plastic, then not a good look. That's very interesting.
But it, you know, so the general big picture is the Great Depression in the 30s caused it all to fall apart. Sears actually offers financing, okay? And so you could
really
and the way they did that is they said, if you own your lot, we'll help you pay for it. And so they started a mini mortgage business.
15 years pay to save.
They helped you basically buy their house, and they would basically tote the note. And the reason they stopped building houses after the Great Depression is because they were left hanging with a ton of mortgages that they couldn't, that people weren't able to pay. And in some cases, I read that they would let you pay interest only for a long time till you got back on your feet. So Sears got really hurt by the Great Depression and that hang. But I mean, that house right there is so charming to me. I don't know why we don't build houses
that
like that.
The front of that house is exactly like my house.
It's a little, it's similar to your house, isn't it?
Yeah, just the gable end and the chimney.
Maybe your house is a kid house.
I bet it is.
When was it built?
38.
That'd have been late for a kid house. But
what was the biggest size kid house though?
Well, the Magnolia, which is the big two story thing that they did. And there's some examples.
How many cubic feet do we have there? Jeez, that's big though.
Yeah, big house. Now that wasn't typical. A lot of these things, and see, it's already cut, okay, and fitted 6488. But
what is Honor Built?
That's the name of their that's the name of their Sears Honor Built house.
Got it.
And so most houses were smaller cottages because a lot of these things were sent out to farms, sent out to where there wasn't a lot of labor, and they needed a system like this so they could put the house together. Maybe, you know, their family, you and your sons basically build the house and you have all these parts and pieces. If you look at the Montgomery Ward's catalogs, their kid houses, the Wardway house is also another one. They'll show on the cover of these magazines the parts and pieces and actually how they came from the thing, where they actually have columns crated up or the doors or the
that's bananas. What tools would come along with this kind of thing? Oh, I guess you're doing plumbing too in the house.
I don't think you had any tools that Sears would send you. So anyway, it would come from a factory like that. And the reason why you started this thing, like what did Brent Hull did, Wardway did not have their own factories, okay? They bought everything from Gordon Van Tine, okay? Gordon Van Tine was up in Davenport. But you'll see that they had a factory in Mississippi, a factory in Ohio, and a factory somewhere else. And so they basically bought these lumber yards in different areas of the country so that they could send things out. And they would have a millwork plant in Ohio and in all these different places. And so they kind of spread out the manufacturing. It wasn't just in one place. And they bought these mills based on where they needed the lumber and where they needed this stuff so that they could ship it directly, quickly, easily.
Yeah, look at that. No matter where they live.
Yeah, so there it is. They have four plants, right, that they were shipping from and where they were shipping to.
And how would you like bring this up to like doing it today? What would that look like?
I have no desire to do it today.
I think I have a huge desire to do it today because I think the quality of building is low. I think the quality of design is even lower. And so I think I could copy 10 house plans out of this, 10 house plans, give them a modern floor plan. Instead of an old-fashioned floor plan, bigger kitchen, bigger living room, things like that, and you could sell these by the truckload with these plans alone. I don't think it's cost effective to go buy lumber plants, and because lumber is too easy to get from different locations and there's no shipping involved. And but one thing I'm hearing from our people is that things like, where do I find good doors? Where do I find good mantles? Where do I find good hardware? Where do I find things that would be appropriate to that style of house? I think those things are actually easy to bring together and make work. So that I wouldn't ship a house like this in two rail cars anymore, because I don't think that's cost effective. But there are parts and pieces of this thing that I think are still very relevant today and appropriate and could work.
Would you ship any of it or just give them a list?
I think you'd ship trim. I think you'd ship. I mean, how many good moldings are there out there? I mean, Windsor and Kuchen are shipping their moldings around the country now. Mm-hmm. But there aren't any national molding brands that I think are very good. So most moldings at big box stores are terrible. So moldings would be something. Mantles are hard. Good mantles are hard to find. Good columns are hard to find.
Who's making columns?
Well, there's a custom company that makes columns for us up in New York. They turn them. I mean, Chadsworth is someone we've used before. They have a bunch of composites things, but they're architecturally correct. And so there's even just to say I want an architecturally correct column, I find people are having a hard time getting that, right? When I do a video on columns and things like that, people are like, well, where do I get one? Where do I find this? And I've said in the video where you find it, and they still can't get it. And so, you know, it's just things mm-hmm. like that you're just like, there's probably 10 items that
it's
you
almost could, like it, a network then of vendors probably.
I think it'd be a network that would help.
Like then, Timberlane, the shutters, those are good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right?
Wow.
But I think the reason I get excited about it is just because I think we're in an era where design is ugly, and people are sick of it. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why our phone isn't stopped ringing these days. It's because I think we're designing a product that people want that's hard to get.
Yeah.
Did you ever do, I think we've talked about it before, but would you ever do like a subdivision of stuff like that? Or is that too much to invest in? Like, do you have to have big money for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it could start out as partnerships. I think you start out finding three house design styles that we like and find out whether people really like them as much as I think they'll like them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a huge investment then, and then you just have a network of people, hey, buy your columns from these, and you set it all up. And whether it comes through one place so they don't have to talk to 20 different people and it's all kind of ordered and then sent out, or whether, you know, they're calling them themselves.
Were you talking about a subdivision like a neighborhood?
Yeah, like a neighborhood.
Oh, you're talking about a neighborhood.
Yeah.
I absolutely think you do that. I think that's another way to kind of crawl, walk, run into this thing where you basically go build the house, show people what you can build it for, show people the good design details and say, do you want this? It's X dollars.
Because where I was doing that Blue Jack Ranch stuff for their model home, I did and put the doors in for them. I was asking the lead construction guy, like, so who's going to be building out here? You know, he's like, oh, it's Blue Jack Ranch. I was like, no, I know, like, that's the community, but
who? Yeah, they're like, all self-performing.
What builder is it?
That's why Josh went out there.
He's like, oh, it's Blue Jack Ranch. And I'm like, but you're not going to have, like, other, they're doing it all.
They're
like,
doing it all.
That, I don't know how they're going to accomplish that. That sounds crazy.
What does that mean? What do you mean they're doing it all? What is that?
They're self-performing their own building. They're not having independent builders go out there. They're their own contractors building their own houses.
So they, like, a lot of communities, you'll have, like, Toll Brothers or, like, David Weekly or these. Yeah. I'm just thinking of these kind of, like, you know.
Production builders.
Yeah, production builders.
And they would all own a part of the community?
Yeah, they would buy lots, and then their clients would get the lot from them, right?
But this well,
or
they'd
build a bunch of specs, and people would come in.
True. So they're doing it all. That's what I would be. That's kind of how I thought it would be cool. Because then you would control it. You know.
Well, I mean, one reason we didn't want to build out there is because you can't, right? And so it's like, if we're going to go build in the golf development, and we're not allowed out there, why would I tell my clients to go out there?
Oh no,
right?
Yeah,
you'd tell your clients to go to the other.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know, we're looking at Maverick right now, which is a discovery property to build, and they're, you know, obviously, I think there's a good fit there, and we hope to be building out there. But we looked at Blue Jack because those two developments are coming up at the same time. Both are golf developments. They're about 15 miles apart, or 5 miles apart. They're really close together. Yeah. They're both trying to attract a Fort Worth or North Texas audience. And so
would you ever do a like lower income, like intentionally lower income?
I think this kid house idea is a way that we would build in the 800 to a million eight kid area.
Yeah.
That you're building.
So a second house almost.
Family houses.
Third house.
Like not your first
not
house.
Your first, oh, right, not right. Not your first home. Yeah. Not an entry level home.
Correct.
Maybe your second or third home.
Yep. Yep. I think there's, good opportunity to do that.
I guess in the 800 to a million range today, that's a second home, third home.
Well, if you consider it's 4,000 feet at 200 a foot.
It's 4,000 feet is
$800,000.
All right, that's cool.
And so that's building it fairly cheaply. And if you're building it at 400 a foot, you're at, 1.6,
mm-hmm.
right? And so 400 a foot, I think you could get a lot of house for that money. And if you're doing it, you're building the same thing over and over again, and you're
optimizing and bulk buying.
Yeah, you're bulk buying and things like that. I think you can manage those costs pretty well.
Did you do a whole windows in all of them?
I don't think so. We're trying to improve our manufacturing side so that the cost of our windows, drops to half what it is now.
Hmm. That would be really cool.
In which case, it'd be very competitive. And I think we would sell a lot more windows at that thing. But the whole thing of us becoming a moving away from a job shop where everything's custom to more of a production shop, is the challenge we're trying to fight through right now. Mm-hmm. But if we can do it, there's a ton of opportunity.
Well, if you could do it, you could actually swing back around and become a custom shop again.
Mm-hmm. Well, no doubt. And we're thinking that existing shop becomes a custom shop, restoration shop, mm-hmm. and we would have a whole new plant that would be set up to run
the
100-year door, 100-year window, 100-year column, right? You could have all of those different
products
that would last, be very long-lasting and very well-built.
That's really cool.
That'd be cool to see a plant. You set up a dedicated plant, because I just took that tour to Windsor.
Oh, yeah.
That's just so cool to see a board come in and then get spit out as like a nice.
Well, I mean, if you think about the manufacturers in 1920 that used to do this, like Curtis or, even Sears and the way they were making things, they were making everything in those plants. And then you think about a Windsor or Kuchen, and all they're doing is running moldings with, think about if Windsor made doors and windows and cabinets. And I mean, that plant would be 20 times the size of it is. And the specificity of that, of the way they're making things and the work that they're doing to make that happen, it's just everything's become compartmentalized and you don't have those big mills doing everything anymore. They just do one thing, try to do it really well.
So it's almost like you could use that existing network and just I'm sending your Windsor stuff here. Sending your shutters from here. All your hardware is coming from here.
Right.
That's, it's kind of better now because you don't have to manage everything.
Right.
Right.
The investment isn't as much. And, I think that it's
you're drop shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Then you get a prettier home quicker.
Yeah.
And you get a well-built, well-thought-out from a bunch of different people.
Yeah. That's really cool.
I feel like wouldn't it be cheaper, though? Like then 1.6 million, or is that just with all the bells and whistles? Like
I don't know. I haven't done the math on it and figured it out. I mean,
a 4,000 square foot house for that amount is like, I get it.
I mean, if you look on the market today, I mean I think that's a very competitive house in our market.
Okay.
Maybe it's a million too.
The market's squirrely right now.
It just depends.
It's hard to figure it out.
I think that there's so many cheap, think about doors that go into those new houses that are just basically hollow styrofoam and
pictures
cardboard.
Of a door.
They are. And just my hope would be that all of those individual things, the moldings wouldn't be MDF, the doors wouldn't be hollow cardboard, there would be more moldings, there would be wood floors and not vinyl. And, so I would try to give someone something that is really something they could live in for the rest of their lives. It's not disposable, because both of those things, those cardboard doors and the MDF, that's disposable material. And it's not real, and it off gases, and it's not healthy, and it's not, right? It's just...
It is so funny. We've been doing a lot of these house tours, and a lot. I've been on two house tours, but I've seen like four houses at each one. Yeah. So it's just funny because we're at this one house and someone had taken like an MDF door or like the cardboard doors and had cut the bottom off of it entirely. And so like you could see it to fit a smaller opening. And so you could see like the top part of this door. It was just funny. And it's a disposable material. We're looking at a lot of these homes and I'm like feeling the front door. I'm like, is it metal or is it wood? And then, you know, what's going on inside these homes? And those are the things I'm looking at. I think our realtor's looking at me like, what are you doing? Like, what are you checking?
No one looks at those. No one questions those things anymore.
Right. Anyway. So cool. So you think you could do it?
I am deeply exploring it.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Yeah. How much variety would you try and do?
I think you could have 20 different house styles.
Wow. Does that journey start at the design team?
Because I believe that design is the point of difference for us.
Yeah.
Right. That our designs are going to be more authentic and better. Right. I think because of that, design is the front of it. And so you would start by offering house plans and see what people think and whether they appreciate that. And then whether they're following it up with, well, where can I get the doors? Where can I get the windows? Where can I get, then you would take that and go, okay, well, let me connect you with those people. So
right.
I think you could, you know, slowly move into this and see whether it works. But yes, I think it starts with the design.
What would you do with
it could also start with development, where you actually do your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
Whether it's a 10 lot or 100 lot, you would try it out and see if the market appreciates what you're bringing to it.
Cool. Well, that's really neat.
What do you think of that?
Like the plan that you're talking about?
Yeah. Do you go like, nah, no one's going to do that? Or do you look at it and go, no, I see that?
I definitely see that there would be a demand for it. It sounds like a logistical nightmare, but I mean, Sears did it. Someone figured it out. So I think if you could figure out the logistics of it, that's going to be the hardest part. I think what would be cool is to do like a little neighborhood of your own, because then you have like total control over it. And I think the reaction that you would get would be probably beyond your wildest dreams. I think people would be
a lot more charming, a lot more.
I think people would be freaking out, like the whole like true historic but new neighborhood, you know, like
right.
That would be like, I was just over, Mark had a squirrel in his attic.
Yeah.
So I was telling you about that. I was like, can I see your Gidley room again? He's like, yeah, come on. And then it turns into like an hour tour of him talking about all this stuff.
That's cool.
That's the stuff I think that you bring that is like crazy. Like once people see that, it's like, I wish you had a giant showroom, almost like a public,
yeah,
like your own winter tour, you know?
I know.
Because people could see that and be like when I came in here and it clicked, I was like, this is like way different, you know? So I think
you could do that with a model home. I think you could, you know,
yeah,
people could walk in and go, wait, where am I?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. It's a very inspirational. So if he had his own neighborhood or even just a few houses, I don't know, like it would be crazy for you to do that. I think that what you would get from the public would be like, I'm buying that. Like it would be bidding wars on it.
That's what I think.
Yeah,
that's
I think so. I think.
But I'm just, don't know.
So it's a big bet, right?
That's why I'm thinking you have to crawl, walk, run
into this thing. You know, does the market appreciate the design? Do they appreciate the products that you bring to it? Can you build the whole thing and them still come? Even though I think it's a 4,000 foot house from us and a 4,000 foot house from, you know, Toll Brothers, they're going to be less expensive, but I think our quality and our design is going to be better
by
than theirs.
Far, yeah.
And people would pay for ours, even though they would get more square footage there. They'd buy ours because they can clearly see that it's put together better.
Mm-hmm. Would you do it? Would you do any building, like build it yourself ones, or not really?
I think you could. I think you, that you know, I don't think that's the first thing you take to market, but I do think that there is definitely people out there that want to do it themselves.
Right.
And if you could, you could send the framing package out there where everything, you know, is goes where it's supposed to go.
You call your lumber yard.
I mean, you think about IKEA, right?
And you, all you need, really need is give them a list of materials for the lumber yard.
True.
It wouldn't
be
this.
It wouldn't be ready cut.
Wouldn't be ready cut. That's right.
And so that would be the piece of it that would be, but you know, if you had a good builder, you wouldn't need that. But
right.
I think there would be people that would want to ready cut it.
I mean, do you want to talk about it, your book?
I can.
I don't know. Do you want to or not yet?
The new book or the?
I'm starting a new book. It's going to be called, the working title is Mr. Williams Builds a Kit House. Now, that is based on a book called Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, which was done in the 40s.
And, I've watched that, by the way, on your recommendation.
Did you?
The movie,
it's
yeah,
kind of campy, kind of fun. So basically, this is a 1940s movie based on this book of people leaving New York, downtown New York, and moving out to the country. And so he buys this old farmhouse, and they end up tearing it down. The Money Pit, which was Tom Hanks and Shelley, whatever her name is, was based off this movie. Okay, because this is the first house fixing up movie. And then the Money Pit was, you know, this scene here. And there's a great scene at the start of that movie when the contractors are coming. It looks like circus animals, right? It's just like they're coming on weird motorcycles. They're coming, their hair's all crazy. And so it's just like these guys are showing up. They're just like, who is arriving at my house? It looks like a Shriner circus and a, no,
it looks just, like Mad Max.
It looks like Mad Max. Anyway, but by the end of it, they're like in the kitchen having coffee together and drinking and talking about their families and everything else that's going on. Anyway, what were you talking about?
talking about your book.
Oh, my book. So
anyway, I want to make that movie.
Yeah, exactly. So it's called, and basically it's going to be this kit house being built in 1920. And comparing it to how the house is built today, and the materials that went into it, the design, and it's going to be like 8 or 10 chapters, you know, planning, foundation, framing. You're going to be able to look at technology, because think about the technology they're putting in that house. They had a telephone, electricity, heating, and gas, right? Which were all fairly new technologies then, because, you know, electricity in a house, majority of houses don't have running water in their house till after 1940. And so
that's crazy.
You know, obviously a city was sent, a lot of people on farms and things like that didn't have electricity, didn't have plumbing, running water. And so comparison of over the last 100 years, how things were built. And I can't figure out whether we're going to have pictures and stuff, because the visuals would, I think, would be very helpful. But going through, you know, millwork, windows, doors, and just comparing it to how things are built today. I think that juxtaposition, 100 years of building, how much things have changed, would be fascinating. It's going to be historical fiction. I've made up this person, Johnny Williams, Johnny Miller, whatever his name is, and the job that he has, the lot that he owns, and it's set in Fort Worth. And so I'm gonna have him building either in Fairmount or somewhere, and just trying to figure that out. So I'm excited about it. I think that juxtaposition is powerful.
Probably a lot of kid homes there, right?
Yeah, but in the 20s, the fastest growing part of Fort Worth was South Fort Worth. And then West Fort Worth, a little bit later, started growing in the late 20s, and then later 30s and 40s. Monticello's the 1940s neighborhood. There's not as much stuff in the 20s. Hmm. So, and I got to do it pre-Great Depression.
Yep.
Because things kind of fall apart after World War II. So we'll see what happens.
So it's 1920s?
20s.
So he's not going to have a drink at the end of the night. Prohibition.
It's
right?
Prohibition, right? A lot of things like that. Whether he's going to, whether he has a car,
yeah,
right? And whether does he have a garage, right? He's got to think about paying for a garage because that's extra. Not with the kit house, you have to buy a garage separately.
Interesting.
And so, anyway, I'm excited about it because it's been really fun studying about how these houses were made and what was available and what kind of design could he've gotten and all that. You know, when they described sending these houses to a thing in a railroad car, I mean, the tile, the mortar for the grout for the tile, the hardware, the plumbing fixtures, all those things came in a freaking cart that then they would load into a trailer and take out to the job site. It's just crazy to me to think of a house showing up that way.
Are you going to talk about, are you going to do a modern fable of this, of like someone building a house today, or like?
No, I think what I'll do is.
And if this is too many spoilers.
When it talks about, I'm just started. So I think what we'll do is, like, when we're talking about framing, we'll talk about the sheathing on a house back then versus the sheathing today, and just kind of just point out how things are done today versus back then. As it's a third person narrative, so you'll be able to drop away and kind of explain things. So,
wow,
that's the idea.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
When's your book coming out?
Well, I'm writing a book on
timber framing.
Yeah, on timber framing.
Yeah. How to build a timber frame barn in your backyard when you hate timber framing.
Have a plan and then you'll love it. No, I don't know. That's not, I don't know if books are my medium necessarily. Yeah. Would you ever write a book?
No, I don't think so. Leave it to people like this guy.
Why wouldn't you write a book on trim or installing trim? I mean, people listen to you like that.
You'd be better off a video, right?
Yeah, I think I probably, I could even screenshot my videos and just caption them, but I'm almost just like, just watch the video.
If you did a how-to series on a bunch of stuff, it would probably perform just as well as you spending the time to write the book.
Yeah, but yeah. I think.
What do you think?
A how-to on trim, you're right. They just watched the video. But if you're explaining design ideas and you had things like that, I'm not sure a video is the medium. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, Gary Katz is making that mantle book, right? Is that done?
Yeah.
You wrote the foreword?
Uh-huh.
Do you have a copy of it? Or
I have an electronic copy of it.
Cool. I'd like to see it.
Yeah. It's, he told me I can't show anybody. So what is it? December? I think it comes out in this spring, maybe a little bit later.
Yeah. We don't have to show Jackson. That's fine. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. No, I'm looking forward to because he's a trim carpenter who's writing this book on mantles. That's cool, you know?
Yeah.
See how that medium conveys.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Gary and I have known each other a long time. I mean, I remember him when he started his This Is Carpentry, because he was a frequent writer to Fine Home Building and JLC, and he wrote a lot of articles. And so he was excited about This Is Carpentry because it was basically going to be his chance to be very specific about, and I guess I'm saying all that thinking he didn't write a book after he basically was all videos. I don't think he ever
wrote
a book.
But he wrote like every video he made, he had like an article to go with it. And they're really good articles.
We use his videos all the time.
Really?
That is like, how do we do this? Okay, we're going to go look it up. This Is Carpentry. Boom. That's where we find it. It's amazing.
He doesn't play around. He gets to the point, and it makes sense. And his delivery is just like a teacher.
Yeah.
So
I watched him at JLC Live. He'd have 100 people in there watching him cut trim. And it was amazing. It was like, how is he engaging these people? Like I was sitting there going, I know how to do what he's doing, but I'm sitting there watching it going.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And the way he would just talk to you and the way he would explain things, it was just, he's very good.
Very masterful at it.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be going there in March.
JLC?
But not to perform like that, just to
JLC?
Be part of Windsor's booth. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
Have you started doing build show stuff yet?
Well, the build show told me just keep making your stuff and we're going to put it on our website. So I haven't done like a new house, old soul, original series, something like that, but I would like to.
What would you do?
I don't know. I think it would be cool to, now that you got me into traveling, go to like significantly cool historic you know, molding places, you know, like where there's carpentry look at some stuff.
I think if you did your mantle again.
But all by hand.
Yeah. Well just as
carved
as,
out.
Just as a, because you kind of made it up as you went along. But if you had your design, went to an historic house, had a design, and then made it and showed everybody how you made it, that'd be a really good series.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. And Matt said to me that he wants to see me trim out a whole house start to finish. Yeah. I think that would be cool too. Just finding the time to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping you'll have some big projects for me coming up. And
We got a few.
Be cool to film some.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some good ones coming up.
Thanks for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast. Stick around for the Patreon extra if you're a patron, and we'll see you in the next one.